your own successful campaign against the provisional wing of the IRA in this country, the Entebbe raid and the German action at Mogadishu were all hailed as breakthrough victories. Everybody was beginning to congratulate themselves that it was beaten. The Arabs were too busy with the war in the Lebanon and with intergroup rivalries. It had been a passing thing. She shook her head again. But terrorism is a growth industry. The risks are less than those of financing a major movie. There is a proven 67% chance of success. The capital outlay is minimal, with outrageous profits in cash and publicity, with instant results, and potential power not even calculable. Even in the event of total failure, there is still a better than 50% survival rate for the participants. She smiled again. But now there was no joy and no warmth in it. Any businessman will tell you it's better than the commodity markets. The only thing against it is that the business is run by amateurs, Peter said, or by professionals blinded by hatred or crippled by parochial interests and limited goals. And now she turned to him, wriggling around in the canvas swing seat, curling those long legs up under her in that double-jointed woman's manner impossible for a man. "You are ahead of me, Peter," she caught herself. "I'm sorry, but General Stride is much to say, and I have the feeling I've known you so long." The smile now was fleeting, but warm. "My name is Magda," she went on simply. "Will you use it?" "Thank you, Magda." "Yes," she picked up the thread of conversation again. "The business is in the hands of amateurs, but it is too good to stay that way." "Enter Caliph," Peter guessed. "That is the whisper that I have heard. Usually there is no name, just that there was a meeting in Athens or Amsterdam or East Berlin or Aden. Only once have I heard the name Caliph again. But if he exists, already he must be one of the richest men in the world. And soon he will be the most powerful." "One man?" Peter asked. "I do not know. Perhaps a group of men, perhaps even a government, Russia, Cuba, an Arab country. Who knows yet?" "And the goals?" "Money, firstly. Wealth to tackle the political objectives. And finally, power. Raw power." Magda Altman stopped herself and made a self-deprecating gesture. "This is guesswork again. My own guessing, based only on past performance. They have the wealth now, provided by OPEC and myself, amongst others. Now he or they have started on the political objectives, a soft target first, an African racist minority government, unprotected by powerful allies. It should have succeeded. They should have won an entire nation, a mineral-rich nation, for the price of a dozen lives. Even had they failed to gain the main prize, the consolation prize was 40 tons of pure gold. That's good business, Peter. It should have succeeded. It had succeeded. The Western nations actually put pressure on the victims and forced them to accede to the demands. It was a trial run. And it worked perfectly, except for one man." "I'm afraid," said Peter softly. "As afraid as I have ever been in my life." "Yes, I am also, Peter. I have been afraid ever since that terrible phone call on the night they took Aaron. And the more I learn, the more afraid I become." "What happens next?" "I do not know, but the name he has chosen has the hint of megalomania. Perhaps a man with visions of godlike domination." She spread her fine, narrow hands and the diamond flashed white fire. "We cannot hope to fathom the mind of a man who could embark on such a course. Probably he believes that what he is doing is for the eventual good of mankind. Perhaps he wants to attack the rich by amassing vast wealth, to destroy the tyrant with universal tyranny, to free mankind by making it a slave to terror. Perhaps he seeks to right the wrongs of the world with evil and injustice." She touched his arm again. And this time the strength of those long fingers startled Peter. You have to help me find him, Peter. I'm going to put everything into the hunt. There will be no reservations. All the wealth and influence that I control will be at your disposal. You choose me because you believe that I murdered a wounded woman prisoner, Peter asked. Are those my credentials? And she recoiled from him slightly and stared at him with a slightly Mongolian slant of eyes. Then her shoulders slumped slightly. All right, that is part of it, but only a small part of it. You know, I have read what you have written. You must know that I have studied you very carefully. You are the best man available to me. And finally, you have proved that your involvement is complete. I know that you have the strength and skill and ruthlessness to find Caliph and destroy him before he destroys us and the world we know. Peter was looking inwards. He had believed that the beast had 1,000 heads, and for each that was struck off, 1,000 more would grow. But now, for the first time, he imagined the full shape of the beast. It was still in ambush, not clear yet, but there was only a single head. Perhaps, after all, it was mortal. "Will you help me, Peter?" she asked. "You know I will," he answered quietly. "I do not have any choice." She flew in the brilliance of high sunlight reflected from snowfields of blazing white, jetting through her turns with flowing elegance, carving each turn with a crisp rush of flying snow, swaying across the fall line of the mountain in an intricate ballet of interlinked movement. She wore a slim-fitting skin suit of pearly grey, trimmed in black at the shoulders and cuffs. She was shod with gleaming black Heerling snowbirds, and her skis were long, narrow, black Rossignol professionals. Peter followed her, pressing hard not to lose too much ground, but his turns were solid Christie's, without the stylish fallback, unweighting of the jet turn, which gave her each time a fractional gain. The dun he ran like a stag of 10, but the mare like a new-roused fawn. Kipling might have been describing them, and she was 100 yards ahead of him as they entered the forest. The pathway was barred with the shadows of the pines, and sugary ice roared under his skis as he pushed the narrow corners dangerously fast. Always she was farther ahead, flickering like a silver-grey wraith on those long, lean legs, her tight, round buttocks balancing the narrow waist and swinging rhythmically into the turns. Marvellous controlled broadsides where the icy roadway denied purchase, coming out fast and straight, leaning into the rush of the wind. And her faint, sweet laughter came back to Peter as he chased. There is an expertise that must be learned in childhood. And he remembered then that she was Polish, would probably have skied before she was weaned, and suppressed the flare of resentment he always felt at being outclassed by another human being, particularly by the woman who was fast becoming his driving obsession. He came round another steeply banked turn, with a sheer snow wall rising 15 feet on his right hand, and on his left the tops of the nearest pines at his own level, so steep the mountain fell away into the valley. The ice warning signs flashed past, and there was a wooden bridge, its boards waxen, opalescent with greenish ice. He felt control go as he hit the polished, iron-hard surface. The bridge crossed a deep, sombre gorge, with a frozen waterfall skewered to the black mountain rock by its own cruel icicles, like crucifixion nails. To attempt to edge in, or to stem the thundering rush across the dangerous going, would have invited disaster. To lean back defensively would have brought him down instantly and piled him into the sturdy wooden guide rails. At the moment he was lined up for the narrow bridge, Peter flung himself forward so that his shins socked into the pads of his boots, and in a swoop of terror and exhilaration he went through, and found that he was laughing aloud though his heart leapt against his ribs and his breathing matched the sound of the wind in his own ears. She was waiting for him, where the path debouched onto the lower slopes. She had pushed her goggles to the top of her head and stripped off her gloves, both sticks planted in the snow beside her. "You'll never know how much I needed that." She had flown into Zurich that morning in her personal Lear jet. Peter had come in on the Swissair flight from Brussels, and they had motored up together. "You know what I wish, Peter?" "Tell me," he invited. "I wish that I could take a whole month, 30 glorious days, to do what I wish, to be ordinary, to be like other people, and not feel a moment's guilt." He had seen her on only 3 occasions in the 6 weeks since their first meeting at Abbott's Yew. 3 too brief, and for Peter, unsatisfying meetings. Once in his new office suite at the NAMCO headquarters in Brussels. Again at La Pierre Benite, her country home outside Paris. But then there had been 20 other guests for dinner. The third time had been in the panelled and tastefully decorated cabin of her Learjet on a flight between Brussels and London. Though they had made little progress as yet in the hunt for Caliph, Peter was still exploring the avenues that had occurred to him, and had cast a dozen lines, baited and hooked. During their third meeting, Peter had discussed with her the need to restructure her personal safety arrangements. He had changed her former bodyguards, replacing them with operatives from a discreet agency in Switzerland, which trained its own men. The director of the agency was an old and trusted friend. They had come back to this meeting now, so that Peter might report back on his progress to Magda. But for a few hours, the snow had seduced them both. "There's still another 2 hours before the light goes." Peter glanced across the valley at the village church. The gold hands of the clock showed a little after 2 o'clock. "Do you want to run the Rheinhorn?" She hesitated only a moment. "The world will keep turning, I'm sure." Her teeth were very white, but one of them was slightly crooked, a blemish that was oddly appealing as she smiled up at him. "Certainly it will wait 2 hours." He had learned that she kept unbelievable hours, beginning her day's work when the rest of the world still slept, and still hard at it when the offices of Altmann Industries in Boulevard Capucine were deserted, except her own office suite on the top floor. Even during the drive up from Zurich, she had gone through correspondence and dictated quietly to one of her secretaries. He knew that at the chalet across the valley, her 2 secretaries would be waiting already, with a pile of telex flimsies for her consideration, and the line held open for her replies. "There are better ways to die than working yourself to death." He was suddenly out of patience with her single-mindedness, and she laughed easily with high colour in her cheeks and the sparkle of the last run in the green eyes. "Yes, you are right, Peter. I should have you near to keep reminding me of that. That's the first bit of sense I've had from you in 6 weeks." He was referring to her opposition to his plans for her security. He had tried to persuade her to change established behaviour patterns, and though the smile was still on her lips, her eyes were deadly serious as she studied his face. "My husband left me a trust." She seemed suddenly sad beneath the laughter. "A duty that I must fulfill. One day, I should like to explain that to you. But now, we only have 2 hours."